A few years ago, a writer published a story called Sexy. It's about a young woman in Boston named Miranda. She's having an affair with a married man named Dev. Dev is the first man to hold doors open for her, the first to be the one to pay for things, to kiss her hand across a table in a restaurant. Watching her walk across the room naked, he says to her, "You're the first woman I've ever known with legs that long." Dev and Miranda go to a museum with one of those acoustically engineered spaces that makes it possible to hear someone who's 30 feet away and you can still whisper to them. So Dev stands on one end of this space. "Say something." Miranda whispers from the other end of the space. "Hi." He whispers back, "You're sexy." Miranda buys a slinky silver cocktail dress with little chains for straps. Asked for an opinion, the sales clerk says, "Oh, absolutely. He'll want to rip it right off you." The next time Dev comes to her apartment, he's wearing his sweaty gym clothes. He comes right after he's gone jogging along the Charles River on a Sunday afternoon, since he won't be expected at home. Their time together falls into this pattern. On each visit, Dev smokes 3 cigarettes and takes a 12-minute nap after they have sex. One day, Miranda's friend asks her to babysit her cousin's 7-year-old son. The boy is precocious, asking endless questions, demanding to have coffee, roaming around the apartment, rummaging through her things. He comes out of her bedroom holding up that slinky silver dress. He asks her to put it on. She's taken aback, but he insists. She finally agrees. He looks at her in that dress and he says, "You look sexy." She asks him, "What does that word mean?" He becomes suddenly shy. "I can't tell you. It's a secret." She demands to know this secret. And so he closes his eyes and cups his hands around his mouth and says, "It's when you love somebody you don't know." They sit together silently for a few minutes. The little boy falls asleep on her lap. Unlike Dev, he doesn't wake up after 12 minutes. Miranda begins to cry softly. She knows that she will never wear that silver cocktail dress to go anywhere with Dev. She knows that their affair is simply another form of jogging. Okay, it's just a story, I know. But listening to it, do you doubt that this kind of stuff goes on every day in the world around us? It's a universal story of that most basic desire for sexual expression grounded in a meaningful, relational life. Sexuality is an essential part of our individual identity. It is more than just gender identification. It is a powerful energy that urges us to have physical intimacy with another person. It is an energy that impels all of life. So here we are, living in this post-sexual revolution world, and in many ways that makes us very, very lucky. We are free from repressive moralizing about sexual behavior, free from the hang-ups of past generations. We are free to explore our sexuality with relatively less anxiety about unwanted pregnancy and disease. We have more contraceptive choices, new technology promising to enhance, devices, potions, books, and step-by-step DVDs, and new technology and new techniques promising to thrill. Now, given all of this wonderful freedom, one would think that our society would have a great, positive, healthy attitude toward human sexuality, right? But it is clear, on the whole, that we don't. The body is not revered. It is just revealed. Bodies are unconnected to whole persons. Bodies are segmented into parts. They are sold and swapped in the marketplaces of desire. Bodies are used more. They are not loved more. This leaves some people feeling trapped in patterns of objectified sex, in which a person is either using others, being used by others, or both. Sexuality has been reduced and narrowed down to genital expression, and other forms of physical closeness and even emotional closeness are cast off as sideshows to the main event. So now, people who are not able or who just don't want to have intercourse feel like they are unable to express themselves fully. Sexually explicit images fill magazine racks, television, movie, computer screens. We've gone from a repressive era that said sex is supposed to be hidden, even to the point of once covering the curvy legs of Victorian furniture, to a relentless overexposure of sexual imagery in public and private places. Now, I am not objecting to pictures of naked people, per se. I almost put one on the front cover of our order of service, but I went with, you know, ancient artwork instead. I wasn't quite sure how you would react. The problem with most of those sexy photos is that they send the image that only people with bodies that match those images, the young, the slim, the flexible, only they can be sexy, and only they can be sexual. This leaves many people feeling ineligible or incapacitated, including older folks, people with physical limitations, or those who have been wounded by sex. Some people feel shut out of the world of sexuality altogether, and they've just given up on this kind of fulfillment. They have bought into that cultural story that sexuality just isn't for someone who looks like them. It's a feeling of not fitting into the stereotypes, of not being able to conform to the invisible love laws that dictate who has to look like what, who can love whom, who is pretty enough to reveal himself, and who is entitled to be sexual. This shuts many people off from the possibility of living a fuller, richer life. For some people, sex has just become routine, tedious, unsatisfying, a habit governed by rhythms of convenience, capped off by 3 cigarettes and a 12-minute nap. In a recent poll by psychologists at the University of Texas, participants were asked, "Why do you have sex?" And here are some of their answers. I wanted to get rid of a headache. I wanted to keep warm. I was physically forced. I was trying to reaffirm my sexual orientation. I wanted to humiliate the other person. I wanted to burn calories. I was bored. It became a habit. I wanted to defy my parents. Someone offered me money. And then there are those of us who are neither excluded from sexuality nor bored, but are still out there looking for that silver cocktail dress, dreaming of someone with long legs, someone who will hold the door open for us and tell us that we're sexy. We search for love, but disguise our own true desire with the mask of mechanical, detached sex. We hide our deepest longings behind provocative affectations because we are afraid. We are afraid that if we really revealed ourselves, we would be rejected. It is a heartbreaking, futile attempt to love and be loved by someone we don't know and are not known by. At best, it is merely sexy. Our biggest spiritual need is to love and be loved. This means seeing others and being seen for exactly who we are. In sexual relationships, we risk having our bodies be seen, and this can be the place of great vulnerability and also great opportunity. If this aspect of ourselves is accepted, the acceptance is profound. If this aspect of ourselves is rejected, the rejection is profound. So, pretty interesting topic, huh? And an important cultural one, too. But why are we talking about this in church? G.K. Chesterton once said, "Every man who knocks on the door of a brothel is looking for God." Could it be that there is a spiritual aspect to sexuality? Could it explain why so many people feel so unfulfilled sexually in a world that is full of sex? A fully alive human being is body, mind, and spirit all acting in concert. We are not merely machines made of meat, as Preston likes to say. There is something more in us, a spark of the divine, a primordial light, something that urges us to seek greater meaning and purpose for our lives. We connect to our spiritual selves most often through these physical bodies and through feelings. Spiritual expression through our bodies can take many, many forms, as you know, playing sports, eating delicious food, creating art. The sexual aspect of our physical being is a particularly important part of this spiritual expression. Spiritual sexuality points beyond reproductive biological functions and even beyond physical pleasure. It points toward a unity with all life. Many of you know what this is like. It's a profound experience of the falling away of ego, the melting of boundaries, the communion with a greater power. This is the place of transformative possibility. But we cannot go there with an ethic of sexuality like the old-fashioned repressive ones. We also cannot go there with an ethic of sexuality like the new post-sexual revolution ones. Because in both of these cultural environments, sexuality is severed from spirituality. Bodies are either shameful centers of sin, or they are merely instruments of pleasure. Sexuality is either for reproduction only, or it is a biomechanical exercise, just another form of jogging. Every major religion has written and unwritten love laws, laws about whom you can love, whom you can have sex with, at what times, in what manner. Religious leaders used to have a lot to say about sexual behavior. Usually it was, don't do that. Sex isn't talked about nearly as much these days, especially in the liberal churches. When we do talk about it, it usually centers around individual choice, individual rights, education, justice, but it tends not to be spiritual. I don't think I've ever heard a sermon suggesting that a connection between religion and sex might be spiritually transformative. In an article in the current UU World magazine, Reverend Deborah Hafner states that sexuality is a religious issue. Sexuality is a religious issue. Because we have a commitment to helping young people develop a moral conscience, including the ability to make healthy decisions. She continues that because of our religious commitment to telling the truth, we believe that people should have full and accurate information that is not biased or censored. Okay, I think we could all agree about this. These are sound and sensible values that have guided us to strong leadership in the areas of reproductive choice, sexual violence, gay marriage, and sexuality education. But they're all about individual freedom. They're all about civic responsibility. Free and accurate information about sex is absolutely important, but you can't make something a spiritual or religious value just by putting the words "our religious commitment to" in front of it. We need to reclaim sexuality as a spiritual value, not just as a political right. And that means we have to talk about sex in church. Now, some may argue that sexuality really is best left in the bedroom. But isn't that what the ancient religious laws tried to do? To gather up sex and proscribe and prescribe where it belongs and where it doesn't belong? In our religious community, we have made promises and given permission to one another about spiritual growth. We have chosen to invite exploration of this and other sensitive spiritual issues through respectful dialogue among members of this very special community. A few months ago, several of us joined the William and Mary UU students to watch the film So the Bible Tells Me So. The documentary featured several Christian parents whose children were gay and lesbian. One of those mothers revealed that after a long period of struggling with the biblical texts, she realized that when it came right down to it, the thing that made her most uncomfortable was the physical sex. Not that her daughter was in any way less lovable than she was, or even that her relationships were wrong. But she just didn't want to think about the kind of sex her daughter was having. It disturbed her. It made her feel squeamish. This was a powerful, honest self-revelation on her part, and it enabled her to draw into a closer relationship with her daughter. Spiritual sexuality is a profound form of self-revelation and surrender. It might not be too dramatic even to call it a confession of the body, a physical statement that says, in effect, this is who I am. Flawed physically as in every other way, take me as I am. To begin to talk about sexual spirituality is the first step in that process of surrender and self-revelation. It is a step to be taken hand in hand with people who are committed to knowing you, people who want to know you. And honestly, is there another place in your life where you have a better chance to know those around you and to be known by them? May we awaken to the holy gift that is our sexuality. May we not hide it under a bushel, but uncover it with reverence and gratitude. Amen.